Call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is now 1:36 p.m. It is Friday, March 10, 2017. And before we begin, I want to thank Christy Blair, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Kyle Schramm from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Eastman, Representative Stutes, who is sitting in as an alternate for Representative Christ Tompkins, my vice chair, Representative Fansler, and myself, Representative Clayman. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Our first and only order of business today is House Bill 69, Repeal Workers' Comp Appeals Commission, which is sponsored by the House Rules Committee by request of the governor. It is my hope today, this is the second hearing on the bill, it is my hope today that we will actually move this bill. Last Friday, we adopted the committee substitute and heard a presentation on the bill. Since then, we have had requests from the committee to hear more public testimony, and we do have a few individuals online who would like to give testimony. So I'm going to reopen public testimony for House Bill 69 and first start to see if Eric Croft is online. Mr. Croft, are you online?
I am, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And if you could please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, and I would just note as an aside that were you sitting in the House chamber in the audience, we would give you an opportunity to address the whole body as a former member of that body, but we're pleased to have you today as a member of the public talking about this bill. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are you in the Gruenberg room?
We are.
Wow, okay. I'm proud to have known Max and miss him. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. I provided the staff a three-page letter, which I'll try and summarize, and an 18-page backup because I wanted to be very precise in the cases I was referring to and the numbers that I was using. I know your time is limited, so I'll try and be succinct. I want to make three points about the commission. I do now practice law representing injured workers, so I appear before the board and the commission and the Alaska Supreme Court on those issues. And so I speak from experience. I still occasionally dabble in politics as well. The three points I'd like to make today, first, the commission decisions over the last 11 years show a distinct and a clear bias against injured workers and in favor of insurance companies. In my opinion, it's not a fair tribunal. You don't get a fair shot. Second, the commission does not do very much work compared to other appeals courts. You get very little bang for your $500,000. And third, the commission has not brought the uniformity and clarity to workers' compensation law that was promised. In fact, often the commission decisions create more confusion than they resolve. On the key point, the first point, that the commission decisions are overwhelmingly in favor of insurance companies, I took the work that Mr. Commissioner Hemingway did, Andy Hemingway, where he looked at all the opinions that had published opinions of the commission. There are 229 of them. 100 of them made it all the way to the Alaska Supreme Court, and by his count, 39 reached a substantive result as opposed to a dismissal for want of prosecution, those sorts of things. So he had counted 39 of those. I was able to find 36. I think those other three are unpublished older cases. I'm speculating there. But it basically, Commissioner Hemingway and I agree on that there's about that number out there. And I understand he testified before you or presented some information that there was a 50% affirmation or reversal rate. I have no reason. Go ahead, sorry. Yeah, I thought you were trying to speak. So, continuing, I have no reason to doubt that. That appears to fit what I found. But I asked a slightly different question. That is, how often does the commission rule for or against injured workers, and how often do they get it right? Out of those 36 decisions, I took out some of the decisions that weren't directly on workers' rights. That is, there was a Harris case that I was actually involved with about whether there were gay, where a gay couple had rights under the Act. That's something the commission has no jurisdiction over. And a Titan case where the employer was fined for failing to get compensation insurance. So taking out those that aren't on insurance company versus employee benefits, there's 31 decisions in this universe left. And I've attached, as I said, the attached materials characterizes them by whether the employee or the insurance company was successful. In these cases, the commission ruled in favor of insurance companies over 85% of the time, I think more like 87%. But the real number is how often were they right? That is, were the insurance companies in the right place 87% of the time? In the 13 cases where the insurance company position was affirmed later by the Supreme Court, the commission got all those right. That is, they're very good at spotting when the insurance company should win. But in the 18 cases where the employee's legal position was correct, as later found by the Alaska Supreme Court, the commission still ruled in favor of the insurance company over 80% of the time. That is, even when the Supreme Court later says that the employee position was correct, it's still overwhelming that the commission rules against them. The board and the Supreme Court are much more balanced in terms of their results, the commission is not. And just to reconcile that with Mr. Hemingway's finding that there was about a 50% affirmation or reversal rate, I just suggest that when you have a commission that so consistently rules on one side, they can be right 50% of the time if they always say, or almost always say, basically the same position. It's like if somebody flipped a coin and I just yelled heads every time, I would end up being right about half the time, but I wouldn't be exercising much discretion.
If I could interrupt you for just a minute, I want to recognize that Representative Ledoux has joined us. And Mr. Croft, I would just get a note from our recording or secretary who reminded me to, if you could let us know, the capacity in which you're testifying.
I'm just representing myself, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Okay, if you can proceed with your comments.
And is there a five-minute limit, or do you want, much longer would you like?
Why don't you go for about another 30 seconds, because what often becomes more helpful to the committee is after you've made your initial presentation, we'll open it up for questions, and I suspect there will be some.
Great. I'll just summarize the other 2 points then. I listed that the commission doesn't do much work. That is, in the last 8 months, I counted up, they've only done 7 opinions. And over the last 5 years, their average is just over 1 a month. That's much less than the Criminal Court of Appeals, which does have 3 attorneys as opposed to 1 attorney on the commission. But even there, they're turning out 14 to 15 opinions a month, or 4 to 5 for each attorney who can write those opinions, as opposed to less than 1. So you're getting 5 times the production out of the attorneys who work for the Criminal Court of Appeals than you are from a commissioner. And finally, I listed the fact that the commission decisions often create more confusion than they resolve. And this is the Hudak and Thurston, the Guys with Tools, a great case name, if nothing else, and particularly emphasize the Adamson case that I was involved with, where the commission, within a week, issued 2 contradictory legal standards for stays on appeal, and the Supreme Court had to bring them both together, consolidate them, and establish the law. So with that, I just say that the commission has a decided bias against injured workers in favor of insurance companies. They don't do a lot of work for the money we spend, and they have not provided the clarity that we had hoped.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the committee for Mr. Croft? Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Croft, through the chair. Really appreciate all the history that you've done in researching some of the data on previous cases. I suspect you've probably also gone back prior to the start of the commission. What do we find as far as a weight towards or against insurance companies prior to these types of cases coming to the commission?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, no, I apologize. I haven't gone back before that. When the Superior Court had jurisdiction, I ran out of time just doing this. I do think because I was in the legislature when this commission was established, the main argument, or one of the main arguments, was that it would bring a uniformity and clarity. As I said, I don't think it has, but I do think you can craft a way to get that out of the current court. But to directly answer your question, I'm not sure about what the bias was before the commission was formed.
Follow-up? Representative Eastman.
Follow-up through the chair. And in your experience as an attorney working in this area of law, do you have any experience that would inform what you would expect that number to be? Obviously, you've got insurance companies that deal with cases on a fairly frequent basis. Obviously, their bottom line's impacted. I would hope that they were doing the right things and prevailing in court more often than not, but I'm not experienced in this area. I don't know. Do you have any experience that would inform that?
Yeah, through the chair, I think you would anticipate a mix. You would anticipate, so in the 18 decisions where the Supreme Court eventually ruled for the employee, there was a mix about equal that the board was deciding one way or the other. So the board was getting some of those that should have gone the employee's way wrong, even at the board level. I do think it's a good question, because there are a category of cases where you have an employee who, often representing themselves, that believes they have a case that they just don't. And so you see, I think the reason that so many of the insurance company victories, all the way through the system, board and commission and Supreme Court, all agreeing the insurance company should win, are unpublished decisions, is because often those are unrepresented people who just are wrong about the way they've thought about their case. They sincerely believe they have a case, but they really don't. And on the employee side, there's such a you have to wait so long to get any relief. If you don't have a meritorious claim, you might have taken it to the board and it not be particularly meritorious. You're often not going to take it any further unless it's sort of one of those difficult pro se, I believe I have a case, but I don't.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Any other questions for Mr. Croft? Eric, I don't see any of you. Any other questions? Thank you very much for taking the time today to join us, and thank you for the written materials. Next, we have Steve Constantino, who I believe is calling in from Anchorage. Mr. Constantino, can you hear us?
Yes, sir, I can.
Please identify yourself. Let us know who you're affiliated with, even if it's just affiliated with yourself, and you can proceed with your testimony.
My name is Steve Constantino. I'm an attorney in Anchorage representing injured workers, and I only represent myself.
Go ahead.
Just to give you a little background, I've been practicing law in Alaska since 1981. In 1998, I was appointed as the commissioner's designee and chaired workers' compensation hearings for a couple of years. In the course of that practice, I saw many meritorious cases where employees couldn't get attorneys. And so I left the board and opened a private practice where I represent injured workers. I participated as a witness and before committees in the 2004 and 2005 sessions where the commission was created at the behest of Governor Murkowski. And I opposed the commission and continue to oppose the commission for many of the reasons that Mr. Croft outlined in his extensive research. One of the concerns that I have, the Alaska Bar Association has appointed me to be the claimant's presenter at its annual workers' compensation CLE, which is only relevant because I do read each year's board decisions, each year's commission decisions, and each year's Supreme Court decisions in the workers' compensation area. In my personal practice and my anecdotal experience, one of the problems that we had with the commission, it was created as streamlining the process, and the commission decisions are binding legal precedent. And what, in my experience, has happened is when the defense receives a favorable decision from the commission, particularly if they change the law in a way that favors insurance companies, and I've seen this in my practice, the insurer will then approach you with a settlement offer that the injured worker who's been denied benefits for years just can't refuse. As a consequence, what you have is insurance companies buying favorable precedent that's binding on the workers' compensation board. When those decisions in another case finally get in front of the Alaska Supreme Court, they're very often overruled and reversed, and the law is then clear. We have created a system where insurers have an incentive to buy the precedent that the appeals commission creates. And I would note for record that these are majority decisions between one attorney, the commissioner, and two lay people. We have lay people creating legal precedent. And I'm not aware of another situation in our jurisprudence where that takes place.
Mr. Constantino, you've been going for a little over 3 minutes. Do you think you could conclude your remarks and then we'll open it up for questions from the committee?
Certainly, sir. I would note for the record that there's no physical note attached to this except to reduce the cost of the commission. And I would also note that when the commission was created, the Alaska Supreme Court expected a flood of appeals, and the legislature funded a separate position for a clerk of the Supreme Court who would focus their attention on workers' compensation appeals. That flood never appeared because injured workers can't get through the system to get to the Supreme Court. So I don't think there's a physical note. My preference, and I support the law, my preference is that the Superior Court hear these matters. And I understand the separation of powers issues, but...
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Let me open it up for questions from the committee. Any questions for Mr. Constantino? I don't see any questions, but I appreciate your coming and taking the time to testify. The next person that we have online is... And before I call on Mr. Hemingway, who's the former chair of the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission, I would note that we also have available for questions Kimber Rogers from the Attorney General's Office, Marie Marks from the Division of Workers' Compensation, and Nancy Mead from the Alaska Court System. Mr. Hemingway, can you hear us?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Andy Hemingway. I am testifying on my own behalf, but I am the former chair, retired of the Appeals Commission. I worked in that capacity for about 18 months. Prior to that, I was an ALJ with the Office of Administrative Hearings, and prior to that, in private practice. I don't want to speak to the financial aspects of the Appeals Commission. You've heard testimony about that, and that's something the legislature will consider. I don't want to speak to the pros and cons in terms of whether workers or insurance companies are more or less likely to succeed. I will tell you frankly, in my view, that's primarily a function of who the chair is, which is probably essentially what Mr. Croft and Mr. Constantino would say as well, that anybody who's in that position is going to have a mindset, and that mindset is going to carry over into the kinds of decisions that are issued. It's also true, as Mr. Croft noted, that a lot of the cases that the commission hears are from pro se's, individuals who've been injured. They may think they have a good case, but the reality is they don't. And they will bring it up on appeal, and I think that does contribute to the high rate of reversal for the employees. That being said, it's true as I indicated that I think a lot just depends on who's in that position. Speaking to the other point that was brought out regarding precedent, I appreciate that there's a downside to that, but there is also an upside, and the upside is predictability. Mr. Cross indicated that the commission is not perfect in that regard, and no other court is either. It's going to happen on occasion that you get inconsistent decisions. The one case that he mentioned in particular, where you saw contrary decisions in a very short time, I would note that was two different chairs. We had a that was a situation where one ruling was issued by a pro tem chair sitting in for the regular chair, and then the next one was the regular chair issued a decision somewhat different, and that I agree that's a problem because you shouldn't be issuing different decisions. The commission's decisions are supposed to be binding on the commission, but it was related to the fact that two different people deciding those cases or sitting as chair. Two points that I think the legislature should be aware of that that I think are benefits to the current structure. One is the timeliness issue, the amount of time it's going to take to get a decision from the Superior Court. They're not coming right out and saying it, but I think everybody knows it's going to take a longer time to get to a final decision out of the Superior Court than it does from the Appeals Commission. The way the rules are set up in the Superior Court and the Appeals Commission, it takes about the same amount of time in either body to get the paperwork done. The difference is the Superior Court's calendaring depends on what cases are a priority, and the top workers' compensation cases are not going to be a priority. Second thing is, Superior Court judge has 6 months to get a decision out. The Appeals Commission has 30 days. So there are reasons why you're going to get a faster decision out of the Appeals Commission. The second benefit that I don't think is really in dispute would be the way pro se's, that is, an individual doesn't have an attorney, how much hand-holding are they going to get from the Appeals Commission versus the Superior Court. I think the Appeals Commission does a much better job of making sure that individuals who are representing themselves understand what they need to do and that they have the ability to get the paperwork that they need in order to complete their appeal.
Okay. Conclude your remarks? I think there'll be some questions from the committee, but if you could wind up, because you've been going on a bit over 4 minutes already.
Okay. The two things I wanted to bring up are just that there are alternatives to simply sending it back to the Superior Court and changing back to what the way it used to be. One alternative would be to use the Office of Administrative Hearings in some capacity as the decision body, either by moving this position into the Office of Administrative Hearings, changing the way the chair is appointed, something like that. There's any number of different structural ways that the Office of Administrative Hearings could take it up. The second thing is that if you do go back to the Superior Court, there's nothing to prevent the legislature, at least as far as I know, from making the Superior Court decisions have the same effect as an Appeals Commission decision, making them binding precedent. The advantage to that is, as was hoped for, that the Appeals Commission's decisions would become binding precedent. The downside, as Mr. Croft indicated, is it gives the insurance companies the ability to basically buy a favorable precedent. And the other thing in that regard is that the court system did indicate that they were open to the idea of trying to develop some kind of expertise within the court system by working with the presiding judges. The legislature can have an impact on that. They can direct that the cases be all heard in the same venue, all in the same district, which would limit the number of judges who hear them. A letter of intent indicating that the legislature hopes for that kind of approach or something that would lead to expertise at the Superior Court level. And the last thing is, Mr. Constantino mentioned, there was money put into the court system's budget to provide expertise in this area, and I don't know if there's that money is still, or if that funding is still available, but it has been provided in the past. So So with that, I'll conclude my remarks.
Okay. Representative Ledoux has questions.
Yes, Mr. Hennessey. What would be the advantages or the disadvantages of you utilizing the Office of Administrative Hearings? Or Administrative Appeals. I'm not quite sure what it's called.
Sure. Through the Chair, Representative Ledoux, the Office of Administrative Hearings has about, I think, 10 ALJs right now, administrative law judges. They provide, basically, they're like the court system trial judges. They provide hearings, due process hearings for a wide variety of agencies. They don't right now have any role as an appellate body, which is this kind of casework. That is to say, where the fact-finding has been accomplished and all that they would be doing is appellate work. The advantages, from my perspective, having worked in both areas, I think the Office of Administrative Hearings has a very good reputation in across the board as being impartial. I don't think they're perceived. They do a lot of different kinds of hearings, and I don't think they're perceived in any of those areas as being particularly favorable to one side or the other in the types of cases they hear. I think they've developed a very good reputation for impartiality, and that's one of the concerns that's been expressed. It's possible to say, well, the chair is going to be appointed, the chair of the Appeals Commission will be appointed by the Chief Administrative Law Judge. That might take some of the potential political influence out of it, to the extent that's a concern. So I think the advantage would be impartiality. The second advantage would be there'd be a fiscal savings because you have economies of scale. I would agree that right now the Appeals Commission, I don't think that it's always a full-time job. It depends on the number of cases that come in, and that ebbs and flows. But if you have a period of time when there's less than full-time work to be done, if it was in the Office of Administrative Hearings, you could have the chair of the Appeals Commission working on other matters as well. Lastly, your staffing position. You've got a full-time staff person in the Appeals Commission. I suspect that if it was in OAH, you could roll that in, and it probably doesn't really require more than a half-time person if you had a structure set up with other staff available to work on it. So the advantage would be money and impartiality. The downside is that the Office of Administrative Hearings does not at present have anybody that I'm aware of with Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission, but I think they would develop it over time. So there is a short-term downside, but again, the Superior Court doesn't have that expertise either.
Representative, will do follow-up.
So you may not be the right person to ask this question to, but just in case you know the answer, would the Office of Administrative Hearings be able to do this job without hiring additional administrative law judges and administrative staff based upon what you know? I guess you've worked in that office. Would they be able to do that without additional funding?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, you have to ask the Chief Administrative Law Judge. I really don't, it depends on what their caseload is like. They certainly would be able to, it would be no more than what they've got right now. My guess would be that they would need a position to do this work. I don't think they would necessarily need a full-time staff position, but they might need an ALJ. But you'd have to, it would depend on how you structured it and what their caseloads are. So you'd need to talk with the Office of Administrative Hearings about that.
Thank you.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. Can you just, real briefly for the committee, can you just tell us, how many years you've been looking at workers' compensation issues?
Well, I'm not through the chair, Representative Eastman. I don't have a great deal of workers' comp experience. I worked in the Supreme Court for 5 years at the start of my career, and one of the things I did was administrative appeals. So I worked on workers' compensation, all the workers' compensation appeals that came through the Supreme Court for a number of years. And then in private practice, I worked as a contract attorney for several attorneys who practiced primarily in workers' compensation law, and I was exposed to it through that. But I don't have a real depth of experience in that area. My primary experience has been administrative law in general and working as an ALJ.
Follow-up, Representative Eastman.
Well, thank you very much, even especially considering that. Appreciate your analysis and taking the time to come and give us your experience.
Sure thing.
Mr. Hemingway, this is Matt Clayman. One query I had is, if somebody is in front of the Office of Administrative Hearings and doesn't like the result, do they then directly appeal to the Alaska Supreme Court, or do they actually get a stop at the Superior Court, and then if they don't like the Superior Court's review, they then have another stop at the Supreme Court?
Mr. Chairman, the appeals go to the Superior Court from OAH. If you were to send these cases to OAH, I would assume that you'd want to eliminate the Superior Court and as the appeal from those decisions and go straight to the Supreme Court as they do now. I mean, you could do it either way, but if you send them straight over to OAH without some kind of a special provision to bypass the Superior Court, then you'd be adding a layer of process, and that's probably not in anybody's best interest.
And then another, just a short follow-up. I know you worked in the Office of Administrative Hearings for a period. How long were you working in that office?
I started when the office was established in 2005, so I worked there for 10 years.
Oh, in the Office of Administrative Hearings. And how long were you on the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission?
18 months,
okay. Any other further follow-up questions for Mr. Hemingway? I don't see any. Thank you very much. Go ahead, Representative Eastman.
Well, the last testifier was not able to answer questions, but perhaps we could call up the courts at some point to ask them that same question.
Ms. Mead is here from the court system. You got ahead of me. I was going to say, of the three people identified earlier, do you have questions? Let's bring up Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the court system. And then I'll make the same offer for Ms. Marks and Ms. Rogers. If anyone has questions for them, we'll bring them up.
Thank you for the record. My name is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System, and I believe there's a question on the table that I could address, perhaps.
Representative Eastman, go ahead.
Thank you. Through the chair. Well, one of the questions just brought up was, could the court handle these types of cases in the Office of Administrative Hearings without or with minimal increases to staffing and resources? Do you have an idea of what additional staff, if any, you might require in order to do that?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, the court system would not need additional staff to handle these cases and has accordingly submitted a zero fiscal note. And I think the question might have been about what would happen to the Office of Administrative Hearings with these cases, and I'm afraid I can't speak for them about the fiscal impact of handling these cases. But to address kind of the other question that arose, the Office of Administrative Hearings, I think the former testifier said, would be able to handle appeals. His supposition was with additional staff, but then my understanding is if these cases went to the OAH, they would not go to Superior Court and would go to the Supreme Court, and we wouldn't have a fiscal impact from that either.
Thank you. Any other questions for the court system and Ms. Mead? I don't see any. Does anyone want us to call up Ms. Marks from the Division of Workers' Compensation for questions? I don't see anyone. Ms. Marks, you're getting a pass. Oh, you do have Ms. Marks, if you could come forward. Got to catch me quick, Representative Eastman. I look quick.
I'll speak up louder, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. And for the record, my name is Marie Marks, and I'm the director of the Division of Workers' Compensation.
Okay. Now, question for the committee. At one point, I think we were going to invite the head of the commission to come up and testify? Was that?
Well, we actually, as I reflected, since the current chair is kind of serving in that capacity, I felt it was better to have Mr. Hemingway, the prior chair of the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission. I felt it was a little asking the person that's the current chair, when we're essentially talking about taking his job away, that and he's only been, I think, serving on the commission for a fairly short period of time. It seemed like that was probably a little, probably not the right person to have to talk about what's going on that commission. Mr. Hemingway, who was, until just recently, was that commissioner, I thought that would serve that function fairly well.
Okay.
I can certainly reconsider and ask the current commissioner, but it seems like since he's serving in the role, that's all, puts him in a hard place.
Sure.
Question for Ms. Mark.
Yes, through the chair. The discussion seems to be on what would happen, or would it be beneficial to move some of these cases to the Office of Administrative Hearings. I was wondering if you have any reflection or thoughts on that.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, and I believe the commissioner had spoke on this, if I recall, and I think it's the position of the administration is that this is a policy call, and that sending a case that had a full due process evidentiary hearing at the administrative level to another administrative function, only for workers' compensation cases, when no other administrative type of proceedings, my understanding, does that, didn't make sense. And that administrative appeals go from a full evidentiary due process hearing to the Superior Court, to the Supreme Court, except for workers' compensation. And so, if I recall, and it may have been a commissioner's testimony, I apologize, but if not in this committee, then another one, expressing the administrator's position that going from one administrative proceeding to another administrative proceeding just didn't make sense. And to do what is done for other administrative cases, except workers' comp currently, which is to have the due process hearing at the administrative level, appeal the administrative decision to the Superior Court. You get your day in court, and then if you don't like that decision, then you go to the Supreme Court.
Follow-up, Representative Eastman?
Yes, through the chair. Ella, I think the conversation seems to have gone by that a little bit, in that the current recommendations to have the Office of Administrative Law Judge look at the case and then take that from there and bypass the Superior Court. Do you have any thoughts on that proposal?
Through the chair,
we haven't as a committee suggested that's the preferred alternative, but I think that
it's
is
an idea.
I think it's the idea we're discussing. I agree completely that, but I'm not sure we've agreed that that's the best idea yet. So,
through the chair, Representative Eastman. I mean, I guess what I would say is, in a perfect world, I think there would be a separate court for every topic area in a perfect world, if money was not an issue. But how the system is set up for administrative appeals is that you have a due process hearing at the administrative level, and then you appeal it to courts. You get your day in court, and you go to the court system, and then you go to the Supreme Court. And so I may have misunderstood your question, Representative Eastman, but I think that that's how things have flow for administrative appeals, and I guess I'm not quite understanding why workers' compensation would be treated differently. It is very complicated, but so are family legal issues, so are mental health courts, so are there's many areas of law that can be complicated, and I guess I'm not quite seeing why workers' comp would have a special rule. And it's my understanding that if it would go from the board to the Office of Administrative Hearings, skip the Superior Court and go to the Supreme Court. I could be wrong. I don't work for Office of Administrative Hearings, but I think that would be the only type of administrative appeal that would do that, the only one.
Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
Well, theoretically, if you didn't want to make workers' compensation any different than anything else, wouldn't you just not even have the initial thing at an administrative, I can't remember what it's called, the lower the Workers' Compensation Board. I mean, if it was going to be treated just like everything else, wouldn't it kind of start out in the Superior Court and then go from the Superior Court to the Supreme Court? I mean, if that's the object of kind of trying to treat it like everything else.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I really would like to take a pass at this one because I know that that's not necessarily the discussion here today, but I will, and I think that that's a policy call, but I guess I will say this, and I'm not sure it's my place to make those comments on behalf of the administration since it hasn't been raised an issue and hasn't been discussed, but I will say that I believe that process, having the Workers' Compensation Board hold full due process evidentiary hearings, has been in place a long time, probably since statehood. And I think that would, changing that process would be very involved and probably would have need a lot of input from all the stakeholder groups, and a very involved discussion of all the stakeholder groups. It's been established that there is one member of labor and one member of industry, and then a full-time hearing staff member that chairs that, and that three-member panel has been established for quite some time, and I think it works on the board level.
No, I wasn't suggesting that we actually started at the Superior Court level, but I think you were explaining why we might not want to use the Office of Administrative Appeals, and I think you were saying that we shouldn't treat workers' compensation as anything different than anything else. And I was saying, well, if it wasn't treated differently than anything else, then, you know, why not just start at the Superior Court level? But that's okay.
But through the chair, Representative Ledoux, and I probably should clarify that I meant once there has been a full due process evidentiary hearing at the administrative level, and that can be in the Office of Administrative Hearings, but that's not the only panels that make that take fact-finding full due process hearings. And I guess once that happens, that's where I said the administrative process should be the same for those agencies after that full due process hearing, which can take place at the Office of Administrative Hearings, but also can take place in other places, such as the board. And I think there are a few other agencies that hold full due process evidentiary fact-finding hearings.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Marks? All right, I think you're off the hot seat. And then the only other person here that, if there's questions, Kimber Rogers from the Attorney General's office is, I believe, here if anyone has questions for the Attorney General's office. And I'm not seeing anyone raise their hand or otherwise get my attention. So I think that's all we have in terms of public testimony. Let me double check. Is there anyone in the room that wants to be heard on this matter? Don't see anyone. I'm going to close public testimony this time. Representative Ledoux.
Well, I was just going to say that I'd be somewhat curious to hear from somebody from the Office of Administrative Hearings.
And I know I had expressed an interest in moving the bill today, but I think the questions that have been raised today means that makes a lot of sense. It's 2:20. Why don't we do this? Why don't we take a 10-minute at ease, and in that 10 minutes, we'll see if we can get somebody from the Office of Administrative Hearings to come and testify. And if we can, then we can hear from them today. And if we can't, then we probably will then hold the bill one more hearing to hear from them. But let's give ourselves 10 minutes at ease to see if we can get them here today. So we'll be at ease for 10 minutes. And we have been joined now by Kathy Frederick, Chief Administrative Law Judge for the State of Alaska, who is actually works within the Office of Administrative Appeals. Ms. Frederick, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us on relatively short notice. I know for starters, Representative Ledoux has some questions for you, so I'll let her start.
Hi, Kathleen.
And the name of our entity is the Office of Administrative Hearings.
I apologize.
This is Gabrielle. So I was wondering if workers' compensation appeals were transferred to the Office of Administrative Hearings, would this be something that that the Office of Administrative Hearings would have the ability and expertise to do? Is this something that you think would be within the purview of your jurisdiction? Would you need additional staff and additional judges to do this sort of thing?
Representative, we'll do through the chair. OAH is an independent adjudicative agency called the Central Panel, and there's about 26 in the country. I'm aware of about 7 that do workers' compensation appeals. While we primarily do hearings de novo, we also occasionally do appeals. In fact, we just sent out a decision last night in an appeal from a entity that was a board. So we do occasionally do appeals. So it is something that I believe we can do, and in fact it's being done in other states as well. And historically, there was back in 2014 under the prior administration a move to handle the workers' compensation appeals that way.
Follow up?
Representative Ledoux.
So what happened with that move?
The administration changed, and so there was at the time a white paper prepared, and it was in conjunction with the chair that predated Mr. Hemingway. And he was retiring and thought at that point it might, that would be a cost savings, was to roll this into OAH when he was out of there. And then the administration changed, and Department of Labor wanted to go in a different direction.
So presumably either the Office of Administrative Hearings or the Department of Labor has that white paper?
Well, I have that white paper. But it was predicated on, at the time, the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission, and Marie Marks also has it because I sent her a copy of it. At the time, there was an enormous amount of cost going to the facilities of the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission. One view of the chair at that time was there'd be a substantial space savings because they were occupying over 1,800 feet in a building at 6 and K, and their lease costs were about $50,000 a year. So right there was going to be a substantial savings. And then there was the fact that they wouldn't need the same number of staff. And a judge could pick up the workers' compensation appeals work and in addition do other things if it was less than full-time. So that was the original thought behind that. But the paper is, I have a copy of it, Ms. Marks has a copy of it.
So if the workers, if the Office of Administrative Hearings was to take over and do this type of work, what would it necessitate as far as additional judges and or additional staffing?
I don't think it would result. I don't think there'd be a need for additional staffing, and I understand they have one staff member over at Workers' Comp, but I think we would have the ample staff to handle it. I need to think more about. I'd have to look more because my information is about 3 years old, so I need to look more about what their current caseload is, how many hours are involved. And things of that nature, and then look at the statistics here to see if we could do it in house. Sometimes we have had a judge that has workers' compensation experience, such as Mr. Hemingway. We had another judge, Judge Pauly, who is now with the RCA, who had that kind of background. Right now, I don't think we have anybody who has that kind of background, but you have to understand, our office handles 66 different types of case areas, and we've all had to learn how to come up to speed in various areas, and I think it's something we do pretty well.
So you wouldn't necessarily have to hire somebody for their workers' comp. If we were comparing whether to send this work to either the Office of Administrative Hearings or to the Superior Court. Presume we don't think that the Superior Court, that there's anybody with any particular background in workers' comp. So you wouldn't necessarily have to hire somebody just because nobody currently has the background in workers' comp.
No, what we've done in other instances is we basically, if there's an area, we were asked by a state agency if we could handle a certain type of case, we sent someone to a, you know, training program to come up to speed in that particular area of law. So that would be, I mean, that's one option. There are other options, too. You know, if you have someone part-time, you'd have to change the statute, though, because the statute currently requires someone to be employed by the commission and have a full-time job, and that's the only thing they could do. So that would need to, if there was a person who was brought in, trained and skilled in workers' comp, that part of the statute would need to be revised. But as I understand it, the workers' compensation caseload has ebbed and flowed, and it's currently maybe not a full-time position. Anytime you're dealing with less than a full-time position, there's a certain savings you get if you're under 29 hours a week just by not paying benefits, for example.
Follow-up?
No, nothing other than I'm wondering whether we could get from you a copy of the white paper.
You know, I have to check with DOA and see if I can, you know, if it's for public dissemination. I mean, this was under a prior administration. I'm not sure what the rules are. Assuming I can turn it over, I'd be happy to do that. I had turned it over to Ms. Marks because she had called me about what our background was, and so I provided her with the history, and that was part of it.
Ms. Marks, do you have the white paper, and can you provide it to the committee?
For the record, Marie Marks, a director of the Division of Workers' Compensation. And I believe it was an administrative policy type paper, and so Ms. Frederick forwarded it to me, and I did forward that to Commissioner. And so I would be happy if the committee would like that, barring any unforeseen circumstances about not being able to distribute that to the public. I'd be happy to go ahead and provide that.
That would be great.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Representative Ledoux?
I'm not sure if it can be distributed because it was a thinking paper in a prior administration. And I would want the committee to be aware that the facts at that time may have changed. They were facts particular to that point in time.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
And any other questions for Ms. Frederick? I don't see any other questions. The only thing I wanted to clarify, because I sometimes hear, well, if this function for appeals from the Workers' Compensation Board were to be assigned to the Office of Administrative Hearings, I understand you wouldn't need to hire any additional judges, but I was a little less clear whether you thought you may need to hire supports and additional staff support that would develop expertise in workers' comp, and I wasn't sure about your answer, so I wanted to get clarification about whether there may or may not be some staff need if the function came to your office.
Let me try to articulate this again because I don't think I did such a good job. We would not need staff.
Okay.
But I want to look at a little bit closer the amount of workload that the commission currently has to make sure that it could be absorbed without any additional staff. And my second corollary to that was additional ALJ. The other function, too, that came up back then was originally the chair was a range 27, and we have a specialty judge category that's a range 25, and at the time the talk was in revising that range 20, 7 positions, since that's a director's position, down to a 25. So there's numerous things that would go into this pot, and right now, on such short notice, I have to think through all of them and be prepared to answer them a bit better.
Okay. I don't see anyone with any other follow-up questions. Thank you very much, Ms. Fredericks. That's been very helpful.
Thank you.
I will share my thought as chair about what we're going to do, because my original hope was to move the bill, but I think there's enough questions we should not move the bill. And my thought is that we'll hold the bill and we'll get the white paper from the administration, and then we'll also get the information. Well, Ms. Frederick can get the information that she needs to provide the answers to the questions that we had, and she can either provide those answers in writing or she can come back at our next hearing, but we can hear that perspective. I guess my preference, Ms. Frederick, are you still on the line? Yes, okay. Ms. Frederick, I'm wondering if the questions we were asking about caseload and whatnot is something you could provide us written answers to rather than provide those to us at a hearing. Is that doable?
Yes, so the question would be, would we need additional, just so I make sure I'm answering the right question, would we need additional staff, which I think I've answered no, but I can put that in writing, and would we need an additional ALJ?
Right. And you'll be able to get access, I'm sure Ms. Marks can give you access to the caseload of the Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission over the last few years. And so I think what we'll do is we'll wait on those written answers from your office, and then we'll schedule the bill in due course. And what I'll note for the members is, if as a result of that there's kind of an interest in exploring more of this other alternative, let's try to figure that out before the hearing, and we can have an amendment offered if that's the direction we want to go, and then we can debate that amendment at the next hearing, which will avoid the need for a hearing to hear from further from the Office of Administrative Hearings, and then have yet another hearing about what we're going to do next. Any final comments from members? This is not the end, but any final comments today from members with regard to this bill? Representative Eastman.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the discussion. I'm very interested in reading the white paper, and certainly I hope if it was prepared at taxpayers' expense that we could get a copy of that one way or another. Thank you.
Any other comments? I don't see any other comments from the committee. So we will hold this bill until the next time we schedule it. And we're going to adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is now scheduled for Monday, March 13th at 1 p.m. So we'll stand adjourned at 3:03 p.m.